Welcome to another episode of Business Day Spotlight, where we dive deep into stories shaping business. Today, we have a guest who embodies resilience and strategic vision. Simon Baloyi, the newly appointed CEO of Sasol, joins us. Hailing from Hammanskraal, Simon took the helm at one of South Africa's most influential companies in April. As the largest corporate taxpayer and a big player in the economy, Sasol's journey is one to watch closely. Simon, thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you, Isato, for having me.
Yeah, it's really an honor. But let me start here. You've been a Sasol lifer. I mean, you spent your entire career at Sasol.
Yes.
What made you choose this a career in the petrochemical industry?
Yeah, I'll actually say the career chose me. So I don't think I'll say I chose the petrochemical industry. So, yeah. I mean, I grew up in Hammanskraal, I mean, in a rural setting in a village called Suruman. That's where I grew up in. Yeah, and at that time, I remember growing up, I wanted to either be a doctor or be a teacher or be a policeman because we had the Hammanskraal Police Training Academy.
Yes.
That now and then you pass there and you see the cadets graduating.
Yeah.
But for me, it was all about saving the community. However, when I was in matric, I got an opportunity to get the bursary.
Okay.
So, and it was an engineering bursary.
Yeah.
And I had to make a choice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I always look at it with a fond memory.
Yeah.
Because when we grew up with my friends,
yeah,
we used to call the traditional healers chemical engineers. I actually knew nothing about engineering at that time. And when they said you must study engineering, and I started looking at the list of engineering degrees, then I saw chemical. I said, that's the one. And that's how I actually decided to study chemical engineering.
Yeah.
So I think it's because I got the bursary to study engineering.
Yeah.
That's how I went into the field. And I loved it. I mean, once I started going into VEC works and various places, and you just fall in love and you realize you can actually make a difference to your community through engineering.
Can you share some insights about your upbringing in Hammanskraal and how it has shaped your values and leadership style?
Yeah, I mean, if you grow up in, I mean, a rural setting, we had no running water. When I grew up, at least now, I mean, after 1994, at least they've put some water. There was no electricity.
Yeah.
The first time we were connected to the grid, I mean, I remember it was 1994 after I finished my matric.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe how my maths book looks at night. I mean, it was like daylight. And unfortunately for me, it was done. I was already done with my matric then.
Yeah.
But I was glad for those who are coming after me
that
they can have a fantastic opportunity to study. And under those conditions, I've studied all the time with a candle. So if you look at my books, there was all these candle spots. But but growing up in a rural community, I mean, we walked 10 kilometers to school, I mean, to and fro. And sometimes today I look at it and think, how did a 7-year-old do it? You know, how do you do it when you're 7-year-old?
Yeah.
But you realize it's about community.
Yeah.
And it's something that I bring into my leadership.
Yeah.
That it's not about one person.
Sure.
It's about all of us. But even though it's about all of us, there is something that you must do. So there is accountability and responsibility for the individual, for the collective good. Because when I was young, for instance, the older kids looked after us.
Yeah.
And as I grew up as well, it was my job to make sure the 7-year-olds can go to school safely and come back. So you do that. It's a community setting.
Yeah.
But you have to fulfill your responsibility. Yeah. And with the neighbors, if you need sugar, you need to ask for maize meal or a piece of rice. If you don't have, you ask.
I know exactly the community. What you're
talking
about.
Okay, yeah. And the community does help you because you can't have food and your neighbor is sleeping hungry.
Yeah.
So you also share resources. And that for me was fantastic. Even when we get water from a well, because we always fetch water from a well. You can't be greedy and go and fetch all the water. You have to think about people that live around you. So that community, that collaboration, that collective good, that is about all of us. And it's about my role in this communal setting that I must be the best that I need to be, but it's not just only for me.
Yeah.
It's to make sure that all of us can advance. So that for me, I bring in my leadership where I want my teams, even the company, if you look at Sasol Stands now, we want to collaborate. We want to make sure that we're part of the South African story and we are part of the international story where we operate. We want this company to actually make a difference. I mean, not just for itself. I mean, of course, we want to create value for our shareholders,
yeah.
but how we create value for the shareholders, it's important to me and it's important to the Sasolites that we have a character of what defines us as a people, as a company, and how we interrelate with other people. So that upbringing, which I'm very, very fond of, because, I mean, it just builds you, it teaches you a lot, and and it allows you to, I mean, to become part of the collective good, not just you as an individual, where you want to excel at the expense of others.
I mean, presumably, because you used to walk 10Ks to and back, so that's 20 in total a day. So that stayed with you? Are you sort of a runner? Do you do any of that?
Yeah, it did stay with me, because what happens to you if you are late, because you always have to arrive at school on time.
Yeah.
So if you are late, it's not a walk. It's actually a 10-kilometer run.
Yeah, yeah.
So running, I mean, it's something that came, I mean, natural to me. And when I got the chance, I mean, and I could run, I started entering races.
Yeah.
I remember my very first marathon.
Yeah.
I used to run 10Ks and I made a mistake and I entered the Soweto Marathon.
Yeah.
It's one of the hardest marathons on the marathon course.
Yeah,
and I remember literally, after running that race, I don't think I could walk for 2 days or so, because I didn't train. I was just fit for 10K, not for a race. That was around 2009.
Yeah.
But since then, I learned a lot about running. Yeah. I trained.
Yeah.
And I actually completed the Comrades. So I ran 9 Comrades marathons with one more to go. Then hopefully when I've done 10, I can hang over the baton to others.
Do you think you'll ever give up? I mean, it seems like this is what you grew up with. It's like
I don't think I'll give up running. But I think 10 Comrades is enough.
Enough.
You get a green number.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic achievement.
I mean, I guess these are some of the things that keep you grounded and keep you focused, particularly as CEO of a company, Sasol Nogal. I mean, we carried an editorial a while ago saying being CEO is hard, but if you become a CEO of Sasol, it comes with an added degree of difficulty. Can you tell me what's that job like for you? Can you give me a rundown? You wake up in the morning, what happens?
Yeah, I mean, if I go that day in the life of a CEO, I mean, my daughter always asks me, because she's like, why are you always in board meetings? Are you bored? Is it a meeting for people that are bored? I said, no. So I said, no, it's a completely different sets of meetings.
Yeah.
But I always prefer to start my day with an 8 to 10 kilometer run.
Yeah.
I try to be consistent. Yeah. I mean, sometimes like today, this morning I took a break. You have to rest as well.
Yeah.
I mean, as the runners always say, resting is also part of training.
Yeah.
So you must rest.
Yeah.
But I like that, because that allows you, I mean, 5 a.m., I mean, before everything starts, you unwind, you can organize your mind,
you can put
everything in the right compartment to make sure that you have clarity of thought in terms of the objectives and what's laying ahead of you for today or that week or that month. I mean, that helps.
Mm.
And it helps you, at least for me, to just, I mean, set things right inside my own head in terms of focus.
Yeah.
Because you need to make sure that you properly prioritize.
Yes.
So that's what I do.
Yeah.
And usually during that run, I set my priorities. What do I want to achieve today?
Okay.
What are the key issues that I need to get done? What are the key people that I need to meet? And what other work I need to give to others?
Sure.
Because, I mean, you also, I mean, being CEO, you've got the fantastic thing that you have, I mean, all of these people that are working alongside you.
Yes.
And I mean, in my case, I know someone said, ooh, I mean, this Sasol thing is a baptism of fire. But I said, there's 29,000 Sasolites that are with me. And because of that, it actually gives me energy in terms of the responsibility of the job and what the job means for the country and also for our customers and in areas where Sasol operates. So once you've set out what you're going to do, then there is usually either it's a board cycle, you're preparing for a board cycle. So there is lots of work that you must do to prepare for the board, to make sure that the board submissions are very clear, concise, and can allow for robust debate, to allow for proper decision making. Because, I mean, the board can't just make short-term decisions.
Yes.
It's about creating long-term value.
Yeah.
You have to always balance what you need to do today.
Yeah.
But how do you make sure that the organization is sustainable in 10, 15, 20 years time?
Mm.
And that's the work of the board. And that's what we need to do. I have to make sure that documents go in there out of the right quality and right format to allow those discussions. And we've got our own meetings, management meetings as well.
Sure.
To look at the business and how the business is doing and where we need to make interventions.
Okay.
Because it's always about the big trade-offs.
Sure, sure.
You'll never have all the resources that you need.
Yeah.
You have to make clever trade-offs.
Yes.
In balancing how you're going to create value for the organization. So so we do that. We do that. I mean, that's part of what we need to do. And I also go through, my annual and biannual planning cycles to also make sure that you've planned, what's coming.
Yes.
Because you can also go day to day.
Yeah.
You have to have a view.
Yeah.
Of what's happening in 6 months, what's happening in a year, and is that work progressing?
Yeah,
because it's not about only today's work. For instance, we're busy working now on a Capital Markets Day. It's an important day for us, and that work is busy happening, and it's exciting. I mean, so I also do take time to go and visit some of the teams as well, working on the long-term strategic work, and just to see where we are, and give the teams guidance, and make sure that when we finally come to the market, we've got a sound product that we've thought through as it determines how the company is going to unfold in 2030 plus.
Okay, no, absolutely. I was going to ask you, as you were talking, I mean, there's lots of interest in Sasol, from regulators to investors to even ordinary people like us, even what you call Sasolite. I'm sure naturally they would be interested in their company. But what I wanted to find out from you is that why is Sasol so important to everybody? I mean, why does it touch everybody? Like, that's why this job is so hard for you, because this is probably one company that if anything were to happen, it would have ripple effects far beyond Secunda and Sasolbank.
Yeah, no, thank you. Sasol is what I always call a cornerstone, company in the economy.
Yeah.
Because we are ingrained in many facets of it. And not only do we make products that people use, we also make products that other companies use. To give an example, we make ammonia and ammonium nitrate that goes into fertilizers, but we also give it to other people that make explosives that the mining company use. We make lots of monomers, plastics that the plastic companies use, whether it's PVC or polypropylene. Most of those plastics are used in everyday plastic components. We also make, alcohols. That goes into detergents, that goes into many other everyday paints and nail polish. We make products that goes into that. So, and most importantly, we also make petrol and diesel that keeps the country moving. We produce up to, for the inland, if you look at the inland, up to 40% of that production is from Sasol, and it's irreplaceable.
Yeah.
So if you don't have it, you can imagine how, would unfold in the inland provinces. So we have that unique opportunity to contribute to the economy of the country. We've stated a number which was done independently that up to 500,000 jobs, are linked directly or indirectly with Sasol. And in terms of GDP contribution, we're more than 5%. And we also, one of the highest taxpayers. So we also like it because we're contributing to the fiscus. And that's where the company finds itself. So it's a huge, massive company. But for us, we see this as a responsibility to make sure that this company will continue to be, today and tomorrow, part of the South African energy and hydrocarbon landscape. And we're going to do that. And that's the work that we're busy doing. We understand our responsibility today. However, we also understand our responsibility going forward.
Yeah.
That whatever the energy system will change and become like, Sasol will become a big part of it. Because we are a national champion today, and we're going to continue to be so going into the future, especially in this country. However, we do have facilities globally. And we're not that big globally, but in areas where we operate, people know about us.
Yeah.
They know this company because of what our people, because that spirit of collaboration, that spirit of Ubuntu, making sure that you're not just here to make money, but how you make money is crucially important.
Yeah.
And Sasol will continue to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I guess petrol is a big part of what you do. And with the global energy transition that we are seeing, there are some investors who are looking long-term and say, well, I mean, is it possible that Secunda would still be around by 2050? Would there be pressure from either funders or even activists for you to close it sooner? As you said, there should be trade-offs. I mean, you see the integral role that Sasol plays in the South African economy, and you see South Africa commitment to the Paris to the Paris Agreement. What do you say to those people about?
No, thank you for that. The transition. Let's start with the transition.
Okay.
The transition for me. That is why we're saying it must be a just transition.
Yes.
It's a transition that must consider the needs of the environment.
Yeah.
Which talks to carbon intensity, mm-hmm. and Sasol will continue doing work in that front to mm-hmm. make sure that we reduce our own carbon intensity. It has to be the needs of the people mm-hmm. in terms of job creation, decent work, and making sure that people are employed and their lives are being changed. Mm-hmm. It has to be that needs and providing the everyday goods that the communities and the people need. Mm-hmm. We have to consider that needs. Mm-hmm. We have to also consider the shareholder value because mm-hmm. companies must exist to create, shareholder value. I mean, that's why someone will buy a Sasol share because mm-hmm. they believe there'll be value that will be created. So mm-hmm. all of those three, mm-hmm. we have to find, what I call a perfect balance. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, it's not about closure. Mm-hmm. It's about what do we build on top of what we have. Because the carbon intensity, if you look at petrol, petrol will... naturally, will decline as EVs come in.
Yes.
Because the consumer will always make a choice.
Mm.
To say, do you want a petrol car or do you want an electric vehicle?
Yeah.
And as they go EV, we are in the mobility. Mm. We'll have to study that economy and that development and see which part of the value chain we're going to play in. But EVs, for instance, one of the key components is that EVs must become very light
mm-hmm.
so that the batteries can last.
Yeah.
And the only way the EVs are light is that most of the components are made from plastic. So you have to continue making plastic. You can't make the EV and it's only made out of steel.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's too heavy, then it doesn't work. So in order for it to be light, it will be plastic, carbon fiber, all of those interesting materials. Then the battery cooling fluids that you need, those solvents someone must make. So for us, as Sasol, we'll study the transition, we'll move with the transition. And maybe Secunda in 2050 will not exist in the form that it exists. Because maybe petrol at that time, it's not 60% of what we produce, but maybe 10 or 20%. I mean, petrol and diesel combined, depending on what's happening. We'll have to look at it. If we need to move over to biodiesel, for instance, Sasol is well positioned to do that. We already have refineries that today are using crude oil. Mm. Tomorrow you can feed sustainable feedstock and make biodiesel and sustainable aviation fuel. So for me, if you say, cast your eyes towards 2040, 2050, the company will be there, but it will be a completely different format. It will not be in a format that you see today. But what I know for sure is that Sasol will be it will play a bigger part in the energy landscape of the country. It will play a bigger part in the hydrocarbon landscape. It will play a bigger part in the mobility landscape because we already have tools today to participate in the future as it unfolds. So we'll do it. We'll do it. And my message to people that say just shut down Sasol and shut down everyone that use coal. I say a better discussion that we must all have is let's transition, let's build something new. Because we cannot shut down and create a crisis for the country. Let's all understand how the transition is going to unfold. And as the transition unfolds, Sasol and South Africa has to transition. And we'll be a big part and leading in that transition. And we'll continue to do that. For example, we're one of the largest procurer of renewable energy. If you look at PPAs, we've procured up to 750 megawatts. And out of that 750, about 500 is in construction already. We have 70 megawatts Msenge in the Eastern Cape that's already complete. So we're busy, connecting that up, by October. Those green electrons will be now in the grid. And for me, that's a fantastic story and a significant milestone. It shows you from what I have, I can start adding new things.
Yes.
That will help us to transition into a future economy. And that's the thought process as you do the work towards Capital Markets Day, that we're going to do that type of work and explore all of those options to show what Sasol will become in 2030, 2040, 2050.
I mean, I guess, as you say, the business is still, you know, profitable. Yes, there are struggles within the chemicals industry at the moment. Still profitable. And so what you're basically saying is that you want to use some of this profit to try and build something. I mean, it reminds me of a story we did a few weeks ago, if it's not last week, about Glencore shareholders. They said that they rejected a plan for Glencore to hive off or separate its coal business. So what they wanted was use the money from coal to try and build something, to try and transition to something else. So is that more or less what you the thinking is here?
Okay. Yes, yeah, that's the thinking. The thinking is that the transformation must be self-funded.
Yeah.
And we're saying our coal business generates significant free cash flow. I think it can be optimized. It's not at full potential. So our immediate focus is to make sure that we first go into full potential in the next 1 to 3 years. Make sure that all businesses, whether it's at mining or Secunda or internationally, that we're generating the most money that we can generate. Once we do that, of course, we spoke about the balance sheet. We'll have to, we've got a dividend policy that will address the balance sheet. However, part of that money, we have to make sure that we have to balance it between returning the money to the shareholders as dividends and also making sure that you fund your own growth and transformation. It has to be self-funded. It's a funded transformation. We cannot think someone is going to come and give us money to do this. It's something that we need to do ourselves. Generate the means to transition and transform the company. So and we already have the basic building blocks, like I said. If you look at tanks, I mean, Sasol, probably in the Southern Hemisphere, we've got the largest concentration of tanks. So if we're going into something like biodiesel and sustainable aviation fuels, that's a fantastic resource. I don't have to build it. I already have it. We can use it. You look at the plant. It's situated next to rail. It's got access to Durban, Richards Bay. That gives an opportunity as well that as you make future products, you can access the markets globally and local markets easy. I mean, our refinery, for instance, in Natref, has got a direct pipeline connected to our Tambo. And that will also allow us, I mean, as soon as we produce sustainable aviation fuels, to make sure that you can, I mean, send it directly there, directly to the customers globally and locally that need that. So for us, that's how we think about it. Maximize your income. Make sure that you use that income to fix your balance sheet. We're working on that to explore near-term growth and transfer the company. And as you do that, you must make sure you continue to create shareholder value.
Yes.
And what's important for us is that in that process, like you said, the country has committed to making sure that we reduce the country's, I mean, there's the NDC, which talks about reducing the country's carbon emissions. And Sasol is, I mean, it's in this country. We will keep on exploring options like renewable energy, like we've done to reduce the emissions of CO2 from the country and energy efficiency. We will double down on measures like those ones, which are actually value accretive. So as you do them, you reduce the carbon intensity, but you also, I mean, generate more income by following that route.
I'm interested in the products that future products that you are thinking about. I mean, I know it's early days. You're only like four months in the job.
We've been doing that work.
But I wanted to ask, I mean, are there any discussions about hydrogen? I know your technology, it's called Fischer-Tropsch. I mean, some of when you're using it, there is some gray hydrogen that comes out of that. Are there any discussions that you're having in the company or even outside about, you know, green hydrogen as a potential new product that Sasol can produce? Maybe the Secunda of 2050 would be the Secunda that, you know, that's known for green hydrogen. Is that a discussion?
Green hydrogen. Check. Let's step back on hydrogen. We've been working with hydrogen. We've been producing hydrogen since 1950. So Sasol has 75 years experience with hydrogen because the Fischer-Tropsch actually uses hydrogen as one of the key inputs into making the hydrocarbons. So we've been working with hydrogen since 1950. We understand it. We actually did produce green hydrogen. We have it. I mean, I've got 3.5 million tons of gray hydrogen, but we already have 6 tons a day of green hydrogen today. We were the first to produce it. We're producing it in Sasolburg. We're just trying to find people that can buy it, because green hydrogen, unfortunately, today, it costs 10 times the price of gray hydrogen. But we have it today. So between green hydrogen and gray hydrogen, I believe that we can start catalyzing the hydrogen economy. We don't have to wait anymore. Hydrogen is now here. We always had it. You can use either gray or green if the affordability is there, and start catalyzing. You can use hydrogen for buses. We've seen people using it. You can use hydrogen for buses, for the trucks in the future. I mean, the big trucks, maybe you can use batteries, but I think the trucks are too big. Hydrogen is likely to win there. So hydrogen is one of those future products. But the Sasol approach is that we won't try and jump into hydrogen today. We already have it. So so if the economy and the market starts absorbing it, and we start to see that ecosystem building up, as the ecosystem is building up, then you can make more and more of it, because it has to be a supply and demand issue.
Yes.
There has to be someone that wants it and buys it, and then someone will make it. So so for me, I see it as one of those future products. And why would South Africa not use hydrogen? We've got fantastic renewable resources. If you look at the resources in the country and Northern Cape in particular, those resources are not comparable. It's amongst the best in the world. So so the country has to, I mean, see itself going into that economy. But but you can't just jump into hydrogen. You first have to work on the grid to make sure you can move the electrons. And that then allows you to then install renewable energy, primarily in the Northern Cape. And once you have the green electrons, then hydrogen starts to become an attractive option.
I mean, I guess, you mentioned one of your leadership values is collaboration. I mean, I think at this point, this is where collaboration with the platinum mining industry is important, because they have a stake in this, in the transition. Because if, I mean, when EVs takes off, they become... They lose their market. Have you had any discussions with them about creating that ecosystem for the hydrogen economy?
Yeah, there's already initial talks with the people, and will continue because you're right. I mean, fuel cells, whether it's in hydrogen fuel cells, they use platinum as a key material. Also, electrolyzers, the PEM membranes, I mean, the proton electron membranes, they also use platinum. So hydrogen as a final product, I mean, and again, it goes back to the country. You've got renewable resources. You can then have the green electrons. Once you have excess electrons, you can use those electrons to split water into hydrogen. To do that, you need platinum. Which we have. So the country has got everything that's required to go to hydrogen. But for me, I'll always caution to say the market must, you can't force anything onto the market. So you have to know it's going to be both. So I mean, if you look globally, there's much more EVs already. I mean, and that's picking up at pace. I mean, the Chinese EV market has really, I mean, exploded, and is now starting to go into the global scene. It's not only the Tesla. People know about Tesla, but now they know about, I mean, BYD, you know? I mean, those cars are coming up, and they'll eventually make it to our country. But there is space for hydrogen. There's lots of work that's happening on electrolysis. Today, the hydrogen price is a barrier, and that price is going to come down. And as the price comes down, hydrogen will then become also a commodity as green hydrogen. However, with the gray hydrogen that we have and the green that I have, you can already start catalyzing the market. So I think it's something worth, for me, it's something that's worthwhile that the country can start exploring. I mean, say, hey, can we start having some hydrogen buses and drive with it? And then you can start putting the hydrogen refueling. You start to get the grips of how it can work and what's required. Because all of it is not about just having a hydrogen bus or a hydrogen truck. It's about the ecosystem to make it work. And part of the ecosystem is the refueling network.
Yeah.
Whereas for diesel, it's already there. And petrol, it's already there. And the EVs, you can see the charging stations are starting to pop up one by one. I saw Eskom also have a charging station that I saw last week, which is fantastic to see. So that's coming up. That's coming up. And hydrogen will need to also do the same. So I think there is, but we want, I can tell you, for me, hydrogen won't feature strongly as green hydrogen at scale in the short term or medium term because we already have it. So we can sell, if people want, we'll sell what we have. So it will be absolutely crucial that for Sasol, we take all the steps. But I can guarantee you, if there's a future hydrogen economy that we know is coming in 2040, 2050, we'll be part of it as well. But that's not all that we're going to do. We're going to be involved and we will go with the market as it evolves. And for instance, I spoke about LNG during the results. LNG is part of that story. I mean, LNG gas is part of the transition for the country as well. I mean, so the ministry released their gas master plan, which thinks about how gas can evolve. So you can see there's also a fantastic gas market that will unfold in the country. And we already have the pipeline. You remember, we already have a network. We have an 800 kilometer plus from Mozambique, and in Gauteng, we've got almost 3,000 kilometers of a gas pipeline network that we need to make sure that it continues to provide gas to the customers.
Right. If I could take you back, so 2.5 million tons of hydrogen, just gray hydrogen, is sitting there. No one... You're not able to use it? You're not selling it to anybody?
Yeah, we're using it ourselves.
You're using it yourself?
Yeah,
okay.
We're using it because we're using it in the fisher traps.
Okay.
So we're using it.
Okay.
But of course, if anyone wanted hydrogen, we have it.
Okay.
Because it will naturally, in any event, if someone buys it, it will replace, petrol or diesel, which is also one of the routes that's going to happen. So, and hydrogen, you remember, is the very first. Product that we make. Because in our gasification of coal, the very first one that we make is hydrogen.
Right.
So we have it at the beginning of our process.
Yes.
Okay. Then we start using it in our refineries and in the Fischer-Tropsch process itself.
Right. Okay. All right. You mentioned the results. I mean, they were not good, I guess. I mean, they were not good. I mean, I think you acknowledged that. But you also came up with a plan in terms of asset review of the portfolio. What specific criteria are you using to determine which assets to retain, sell, or to close during the review?
Yeah, if you go back to the results before we go to what we're thinking about assets, especially internationally. You have to look at the results as, if you remember what happened to Sasol, we had our normal financial year. We then look at the assumption at the end of the year and we had to do an impairment.
Yes.
And that impairment, which is actually a non-cash cost item.
Yeah.
I mean, it does appear as losses, but it's an accounting, it's an accounting treatment. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's an accounting treatment of, your performance in the year.
Yeah.
That was driven by, the derivatives between ethane and ethylene, where the margin there, we saw it in the long term, not in the short term, in the long term, we saw that margin squeeze. And of course, that has led to us saying we compared the carrying capacity or the book value of the asset, especially our Lake Charles asset. We look at the carrying capacity or the book value versus the value in use in terms of what is the future cash flows you can get from this. And when we do that, we have to book that impairment.
Yeah.
And that impairment then led to a loss. But before, if you step back, you look at the company's performance from 23 to 24, without that impairment, before we booked it, we actually saw improvement in volume. So the controllables.
Right.
So the volumes went up across all sectors by 1 to 6%, 6% in gas. We were 1% up in Secunda, in Synfuels. And in our chemical businesses, we are up between 2 and 3%. So the volumes, which we can control, we went up. The cost as well, which is under our control. We actually only had a 1% increase on our cash fixed cost and CAPEX, which shows that we're able to absorb inflation. So we're able to do that. And if you look at the cash generation ability of the business, we actually generated over the whole financial year, 8 billion rand of free cash flow. I think, that's not for me at full potential. And that's what we're talking about.
Sure.
So going back to the chemical business, if we look at the international chemical business, already in April, I started to intervene because when I looked at that business, I actually changed the operating model. So as I took over, I changed the operating model where I separated out the international chemical business by itself and then had the South African business, which is both energy and chemicals combined. Because for me, it was more natural to do it that way because the other one is coal dominated with some gas. It will have a different future going forward. So you have to put it together so that you think about it in that format. And the international business, you can now nicely start comparing it with its peers to say, for a business like this, what is it supposed to do?
And
when we looked at it, in terms of the EBITDA margins, that business is bottom of the pack. So we now have what I call self-help measures to move it to middle of the pack. And hopefully in the medium term and in the long term, we'll move it to top tier or top of the pack. We have to be where the BASF and the INEOS are. So we're going to do that work. So that work was then premised on three critical, pillars. The first one was streamlining the org structures, making sure you remove the duplications, and interrogating your cash fixed cost, and that gives you a benefit. So that's a benefit that we can get ourselves. Then we're looking at our go-to market, where we're checking how we're interfacing with customers, how do we innovate for customers, how do we even segment the customers that we can innovate with to create higher gross margins. We're then looking at that. We'll do that work. And finally, we said in the international space, we said some of the businesses we know, you might have a plant, not the whole value chain, but a plant which during good times, it makes lots of money. And during the low end of the cycle now, it's actually draining cash. So those assets we look at to say, how do we fix it to at least make sure that during the bottom end of the cycle, either it's cash neutral or it slightly makes cash and then prints lots of money in the high end of the cycle. And there, we look at, we either fix that asset or we collaborate with others to make it cash positive. We will consider closing it or even selling it if possible. So that's what the thought process was. So it was not a generic asset review where you remember Sasol went with an asset review to sell assets to show the balance sheet. We won't do that. So we're happy with our dividend policy. We've changed our dividend policy and framework to make sure that we don't pay dividends from debt, but we pay dividends from cash generated from operations. So we've given that dividend policy where dividends will be paid. At least the baseline dividend is 30% of free cash flow. That then allows you to have money left to start paying down your debt. So we're going to do that. So I'm happy with that approach. So we're not talking about a asset disposal. Or like what we did when we disposed of Lake Charles. The 2020 Lake Charles and then our oxygen trains. And part of our gas network, we will not be doing that. We'll just be looking at the assets to improve them. To make sure we'll start internationally, but we also look locally as well. To make sure that all assets actually are performing at their full potential.
So this is not a desperate measure.
No, this is not
fixing the business.
We're just fixing it for what I call full potential. And full potential is making sure that we maximize the cash generation and ability of the business. Where in mining, we'll keep on focusing on the rand per ton. And making sure that we maximize our mines, our own mines the cheapest coal. So we must maximize coal that we mine ourselves. But we still buy coal for quality and with arrangements with others, we'll keep that. So for us, the focus there will be rand per ton, drive towards the lowest rand per ton. In Synfuels, we're running that plant between 7 and 7.2 million tons. We want to move that up to the 7.5, 7.6. And that will do by improving the coal quality. And we're working on it. We're working very hard to make sure we have a project that will come for a final investment decision. And if that project is then approved, we'll be able to restore that coal quality by FY27. We're going to push to do it earlier because the sooner we do it, the more value we can derive from our facilities. And we'll look at other inputs into that facility as well. In terms of our CapEx, supply chain cost, we're going to make sure that if you look at the benchmarks, we make it competitive. Because Synfuels has to also focus on the unit cost of production to make sure that we produce our product. And that impacts our break-even. So we're going to focus on that break-even. And the mobility business, you remember we have 10 billion, up to 10 billion liters of petrol and diesel that we sell in various channels. So we're going to continue to optimize how we sell those products to generate value for the shareholders. And I already spoke about the international chemicals where in terms of EBITDA margins, today our peers are in the teens in terms of EBITDA margins. We are like single digit. Yeah. We need to start moving to where our peers are.
And
that has to do with us making sure that, because we do have high turnover in our business, but you don't see lots of cash generated. It doesn't flow back, which already talks about costs which are actually locked into the business. And we're going to work very hard to also remove those structural costs.
Right. I mean, have you identified, maybe it's early days, but have you identified how much can be taken out?
No, we'll come to the market. We'll come to the market at when we do the half year results.
Okay.
Then we'll set those targets in terms of what we're aiming for.
Okay.
And we'll give the time frame.
Okay.
And then we can, then every 6 months, when you see the market, we can report on the progress. Because I'm just allowing the guys to do the work.
Yes.
Otherwise, if you don't do the work, you end up with unrealistic expectations of teams as well.
That's true. I mean, your debt, I mean, as you say, you are not in a desperate situation as you were in 2020. I mean, but your debt at $4.1 billion.
Yes.
Is that comfortable? How does that compare to the proportion of your EBITDA?
The 4.052 or the $4.1 billion net debt.
Yeah.
We said we want to set the risk tolerance at 4.
Okay.
And below 4, that is why we suspended the final dividend now.
Yes. Yeah.
And we skipped the final dividend.
Yeah.
And then we'll resume the dividend as soon as the debt goes below 4.
Yeah,
and we're going to focus on that. So the reason why we said that 4 or below 4, because at 4, our net debt to EBITDA is around 1.5 times.
Okay.
So we see that as a risk tolerance. I mean, other companies do run their businesses highly geared above that. We said we want to be below that number.
Yeah,
and you ask me, what is your target debt? So our target debt will be between 0.5 to 1 times EBITDA. So which means, if our debt starts to reach anything between $2 and $3 billion dollars, we'll be happy there. Today's performance, of course, we'll be more comfortable there, and we can start looking at whether we need to step up our base dividend. So we'll keep the base dividend at 30% until we go between 0.5 and 1 times EBITDA.
Okay.
Then we can look at other various mechanisms, whether it's share buybacks or stepping up the base dividend. We look at all of those options.
Oh, I see. Okay. And this 1.4 times that you have, 1.5 times, how does it compare to your agreement with lenders?
The covenants,
yes.
Yeah, the debt covenants. Yeah, no. It's way, I mean, we can go 3.5, so you can see it's, but in 2020, we're almost 5 times. So
yes.
that was not a nice place to be.
Yes.
So we're well within our debt covenants, but you need to be safe because anything can happen.
Yes.
Because the issue is about the black swan events.
Yes.
You don't want when a black swan event comes.
Yes.
And you just jump to 3.5 and you just run back to your lenders.
To your lenders again. Okay.
So we think once we run at 0.5 and 1 times, it will also help us to absorb market shocks if they may arise. But we weigh below our covenants, so we're sitting comfortably. So that is why we won't take any desperate steps.
It's a strong balance sheet.
We'll have to strengthen it even more.
Yes.
Because my view is that for a company which is called dominated, your sources of funds will keep on disappearing.
Yes.
But we will not move Sasol towards, I mean, what you call a cash balance sheet, where you just run only with cash. We will not do that because I mean, that becomes a lazy balance sheet and it doesn't allow you to utilize capital efficiently.
Yeah.
So that is also good. That is why I'm actually motivated. I mean, and Team Sasol is motivated to make sure we fix our international businesses, because those can have debt carrying capacity. If you look at other chemical companies, so we can be able to put debt there once the cash flows justify that. We'll also start transforming our local businesses as well. And as we transform them, building a sustainable energy giant, that will also have debt carrying capacity.
Yeah.
So Sasol will always have some level of debt, because like I said, debt is not bad.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be sitting with this dollar debt. I mean, that's another change that we're trying to make, because all our debt is in US dollars.
Yeah.
So we also, I mean, slowly migrating it to have a balance in line with our income, because we earn both rands and dollars. You don't just want to have dollar debt.
Yes.
So okay. we also, I mean, looking into how we slowly balance that debt between dollars and ZAR.
Right. All right. Okay. I mean, as you say, if I could close off here, I mean, as you say, you have to do, there are trade-offs here. I mean, your job requires that. I mean, you, let's say you have 100 rand as profit for Sasol. 30% of that goes towards dividend. And you have to pay debt. And some of it will have to go towards building, transitioning the company.
Yes.
Can you break it down for me? Are you able to? Because I know the 30%. What? How much goes to paying down debt? What I'm trying to get to, how much are you investing towards the future Sasol?
Yeah, I mean, our capital allocation framework, which we also, I mean, we're re-looking at it, but if I can tell you the current one,
okay.
it always talks about first order capital, okay. which is to sustain the current businesses.
Okay.
You remember our capital, our CapEx
yeah.
is between, I mean, 28 to 30, mm-hmm. which is lots of money, yeah. 30 billion rands yeah. that yeah. we're spending.
Yeah.
We first go for first order, which is sustenance capital.
Okay.
Then once you've done that, you look at what we call growth or second order capital.
Okay.
Today, we're spending around 1 billion rand. So for me, that's too little. I mean, okay. that's the question that you're asking. Will we step it up? Yes, you should see after our Capital Markets Day.
Yes.
Once we've shown the path that we are taking, that we'll start increasingly starting to put more money into the future of the company. So we're gonna start working towards that. And we do have, as we're talking, we need, I mean, it's also a partnership. Because we've learned from the Lake Charles not to do everything by ourselves.
Yes.
So we also open to make sure that as we grow the company, we'll partner with others. So you'll see as we start making announcements, you'll just see Sasol and someone else, Sasol and someone else. And that's how we're going to progress to make sure that we also don't take undue risk only by ourselves. I mean, we do have extraordinary capabilities. But those capabilities also require us to be prudent as we embark on transforming the organization.
All right. Simon, thank you. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank
through.
You, Jesus.
Is there anything that I forgot that you would like to add?
Yeah, maybe to say Sasol is an iconic South African company with a global footprint. We're very proud of where this company started and where it is today. But I'm even more excited about what it is going to become.
Yeah.
And I think the 29,000 Sasol employees, you can see and feel their energy and commitment. All of us understand that we have to create shareholder value, but how we do it is increasingly and very important to us. So we'll always focus on safety. We'll focus on making sure that we are a good citizen everywhere we operate.
Yeah.
And we understand our place in this country. That we want to be part. We are part of the energy story and chemical story today.
Mm.
We'll be part of the energy story and the chemical story going forward. Mm. And other markets will open up as the economy transitions, and Sasol will be part of it. So I mean, we're proud of our home base as well, because it's what allows us to be able to do what we do globally. And we've got fantastic assets. I mean, from the US to Germany to China, that can be leveraged to make sure that this company continues to go from strength to strength.
All right. Thank you. Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you, Tisa.
All right. And that brings us to the end of today's episode of Business Day Spotlight. A heartfelt thank you to Simon Baloyi for joining us and offering a glimpse into the complexities and opportunities at Sasol. Simon, your journey from Hammanskraal to leading one of South Africa's most influential companies is truly inspiring. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Until next time, keep shining the spotlight on stories that matter. This is Tshetso Motsweneng signing off.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production.